You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. The NBA season is over, and Miami's magical run has come to an end. So to help me break it all down is beat reporter with the Bay Area News Group and the host of Locked On Warriors, as well as my co-host on Locked On NBA, it's Wes Goldberg. How are you doing, Wes?
I'm good. How are you?
I've been better, man. The last couple days kind of hit me a little bit harder than I expected. I think anybody following this show and following my tweets, which have bordered on somewhat very angry and dismissive of Lakers Nation in general, because I just think that Lakers fans have proven to be really obnoxious. Look no further than threatening the life of Danny Green and his fiance for missing a wide open three-pointer as indicators that fandom can be pretty hostile and dangerous at times.
You know, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day and people knocking Miami sports fans. You know what the Miami sports fans just don't do? They don't like threaten players' lives. You know, that's very, and you would think that like Lakers fans would be in that because you have like those warm weather cities that tend to be a little bit more casual as far as a fan base goes. We're not talking about Boston or Chicago where you really have nothing better to do in sports months than to go in to a sports bar or go to a stadium or an arena and watch these things. But you know, in Miami, look, I was invested too, right? In this championship far more than I thought I was going. Like I thought the Lakers were going to win this thing just given that I thought they were a much better team than Miami.
They were your preseason favorite as far as a title. You've been very bullish about their chance. Even when I argue that the Clippers might have a good chance of upsetting them, you were very strong on the Lakers from day one. So props to you.
Well, thanks. But, you know, I didn't think I was, you know, taking a necessarily hot take there with they had LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and I overthink the sport as much as anybody else. But at the end of the day, when you have LeBron and Anthony Davis, you have the two, that's easily the best duo in the league. Like even Kawhi and Paul George don't even come close to LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like Paul George is what, a top, 10 to 15 player, where
Playoff Davis, P isn't even a top 100 player, I think. So,
I would rather have playoff Rondo than playoff P. So, the Lakers have three players better than Paul George. I thought that the Heat getting there was, you know, they were playing with house money getting to the finals. I mean, just sort of playing with house money. I think it was clear. And you and I talked about this on Locked On NBA, and I'm kind of more on your side now where I think the Lakers were the better team, but I don't think it was as big of a difference as some people have made it out to be. And I think Miami, had they been healthy, had a shot in that series, still would have given the edge to the Lakers, I think, but they almost took them, they took them the six games. And I think at that point, especially game five, I just found myself rooting for the Heat much more than I thought I would, despite being a Heat fan. I kind of just chalked it up to they've got no shot in this thing, to really thinking they had an opportunity. And I could see why you kind of got more invested than maybe you thought you would too.
I'll be honest, I was not prepared for it and still haven't been, at 100% following their elimination, because I did wind up feeling a lot more, as you pointed out, emotionally invested in their run. Just kind of the whole process of covering this team all year, of talking about them and seeing them up close and seeing their personalities. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be there for Media Day throughout the season, even prior to the hiatus, to be able to talk to them and see them on Zoom calls, to see them kind of evolve once the hiatus took place in mid-March, and just see their personalities come through to some degree, and to be as focused on their chances of advancing in the playoffs as any team, and to prove that they could, belong in this level and had something to prove and could achieve much more than a lot of people expected out of them. So I think that was a big part of it. And then seeing like Goran Dragic, who, I've always been a big fan of and has been a fan favorite, I think, for many years. But I think it's so funny that the discussion has always been about where Goran ranks among point guards in franchise history. But we've never seen anything like this as far as his performance at his age, to come off the bench, to become a starter, to guide this team throughout the playoffs, to be their leading scorer up until the point he gets to the finals, and then to work so hard to get back into the finals after suffering a tear of the plantar fascia. I mean, and to see him just kind of talk about it, like knowing that it can't get any worse, that the only obstacle to him being on the floor was, well, I'm just dealing with a whole hell of a lot of pain, more than most people can take, and I'm still out here cutting and scoring and doing everything that I possibly can in game six. I think it was just such a, so many different emotions. And I know I'm not comparing myself to Eric Spoelstra, but for even Spoelstra to be as open with his emotions, I mean, we've never seen that kind of reaction from him. And I can't get that image out of my mind about seeing him just crying and trying to hold back tears. We've never seen this through 2011, through the big three, through Dwayne's retirement. Nothing has brought him even close to this moment. So I think the whole bubble, it's just been a whole hell of a lot of a lot to take from the season. But I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, because there's been so much. But do you have a favorite memory from Miami's playoff run? Because there are so many singular moments, I think, but I think almost all of it is just something that you can accept and love forever and a fond memory. But is anything stand out to you as far as a singular memory?
It was probably tied between two things. Bam Adebayo's block of Jason Tatum was one of those like all time moments, right? At least if you're a Heat fan, we talked about it possibly being one of the greatest defensive plays in postseason history. And I think that's fair. I think the only thing that comes that's far and away better than that is LeBron's chase down on Andre Iguodala. But that play was so spectacular. And then Tyler Hero's outburst in that same series. Now, and off the top of my head, I'm forgetting what game that was in. Was that five?
Game five.
Mm-hmm. And those both stand out to me. As great as Jimmy Butler has been, right? And I think it's clear, by the way, now, Jimmy Butler, the question was, can he be good enough to lead your team as your best player to an NBA Finals? I was maintaining, even during the start of the playoffs, I think even before, even through that Milwaukee series, I don't think Jimmy Butler is that sort of player. I was completely wrong. I think Jimmy Butler is the kind of guy who could be the best player on a championship team.
Let's put a pin on Jimmy Butler talk, because I've got some questions about later on that we'll save for segment two.
So despite him showing that to me, right, I still take the Tyler Hero and the Bam Adebayo moments because of what it represents, not only how good they are and the fact that they are gamers right now, but what that means for Miami's future. If you combine those things and sort of those singular moments where you see Bam Adebayo rise up for that block against Jason Tatum, you are seeing a spectacular singular play in the moment, right? That just should survive on its own in the history of the game as one of the great defensive plays in postseason history. But it also represents that this Bam Adebayo guy is a legit player, maybe one of the best 15 players in the league right now. And what that means for Miami's future is so exciting. You take all those emotions and you combine that into that moment, it stands out. And the same thing goes for Tyler Hero's game five outburst against the Celtics as well, where, you know, for him to do that as a 20-year-old rookie on that sort of stage, and he had an up and down playoffs. I don't think it was as great as people tended to, you know, to make it out to be, but his highs were very, very high.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to a lot. Like, you can't really expect that sort of consistency that you got from like Goran Dragic, who is a veteran, but for him to reach those highs, just it shows you what sort of ceiling he has, which was the knock against him going into the draft, right? Is what kind of ceiling does this guy have? He showed that he could be one of the stars in the NBA, certainly an all-star level player. And for all those things to sort of coalesce in one postseason made it very memorable.
That's a really well said point. And one of the things that I keep coming back to with Tyler, because I've talked to a lot of people about him over the last few weeks, watching his evolution in the playoff run. And the one I think that stands out the most was from Rob Mahoney of The Ringer. And he talked about just kind of accepting the variance that comes with a rookie, that you just kind of have to let him go, because with a player as combustible as him, and I use that expression talking about game six early on, when it was clear that Miami needed a burst from somewhere because they weren't going to get it from Jimmy, who was clearly exhausted and perhaps saving himself for game four or for the fourth quarter if necessary, but they weren't going to get it from Bam either, who was clearly struggling. So Tyler is just that player who can get off and just burst so on the scene out of nowhere from in one given moment there. So I think it's always stood out to me once I talked to him about it, how true that is. Like, he's going to make mistakes. That's just the nature of who he is as a player right now. Anyway, now he can continue to evolve and become much more consistent, but he's also 20 years old, as you pointed out. He's almost a rookie. And it's been incredible to see him have that confidence and the willingness to continue to contribute and fight through it. And he's going to make mistakes, But at the same time, you just kind of have to learn to live with them. And that's
part of what makes me them. He reminds me so much of Jamal Murray, where that was like Jamal Murray was going to the playoffs pretty early in his career. And you would have these games, you'd go out and score 50 points in the postseason. You're like, what is going on? And they would come out the next game and score 12. And you're like, what's going on? And Tyler Hero reminds me a lot of that. And like, first of all, their games are very similar. But they're sort of point guards, but you know, they can use they play with fives who are kind of really running the offense there in the case of Nikola Jokic and Bam Adebayo. But they're these incredible off the dribble 3-point shooters that have this ability to just take over quarters or even entire games. And once they sort of get that going, the rest of their game just opens up, and all of a sudden you see like Jamal Murray or Tyler Hero getting to the basket with so much more ease, finishing at the rim more consistently. And then they're dishing off passes and they're really becoming weapons. And then they go from sort of being these secondary options on their offense, or even in the case of Hero, tertiary or fourth type option sometimes on the offense, to becoming the entire offense and the go-to guy. And that bodes well if you're the Heat, right? Because you're seeing how good Denver has been over these last couple of years with an entire thing revolving around Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. And they seem to me, with Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, to be going in the same path. Mm-hmm. And I think they have a slightly higher upside. I don't think Bam will ever be the offensive player that Nikola Jokic is, but defensively he's so much better that I would take maybe the upside of those two guys more than even Jokic and Murray, which seems to be a championship type core.
That's a good point. Did you see Murray's comments following Jimmy Butler's performance in Game 5?
No.
Oh, he was being interviewed, I think, through some – I can't recall exactly what format it was. It was a Zoom call, but he was talking immediate reaction to Game 5, and he was just talking about how great Jimmy is, like that he wants to be a part of that. Like, those were his words, and I guess it kind of in the moment as a player, maybe he wasn't quite aware of how it came across. But to say that it was something he wanted to be a part of, because that he needs a player like Jimmy to constantly push him and to ask so much of his teammates and to show that he's willing to put it all on the line, that was pretty eye-opening. So I tweeted afterwards. It was late once, you know, the Game 5 ended, but I tweeted it out after I saw that video that, you know, add Jamal to the growing list of players that want to be part of Heat culture moving forward. It's certainly an exciting time to be a Heat fan, but we'll get into that a little bit more in the next segment. I'm here with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Warriors, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. But one of the things you can definitely be excited about is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. That's not just talk, because it's just such a good tasting protein bar. It's covered 100% in chocolate, so many different flavors to choose from, and you'll always be satisfied by picking any of those delicious flavors. They've got 18 amazing ones to choose from, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, banana bread. My wife loves the chocolate mint. They're great. They're really soft and easy to chew, so you won't even know that you're eating a protein bar. And they're great for people that are health conscious and trying to lose or maintain weight, because it's a delicious treat that you can go ahead and just have as a snack sometimes to keep you going, to get the nutrients that you need. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for all sorts of diets. And right now, if you go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I'm here with Wes Goldberg, my former co-host on Locked On Heat. We're talking a little bit about Miami's magical run and just about everything that it represented. I didn't really give you my singular moment, something I'll probably talk about in another episode, but I did want to kind of look at some of the questions I had about the season and how they played out, because I think it's kind of a good exercise to just say, you know, we had these expectations for the team moving forward in October, which seems, you know, it was a year ago. It also seems like a lifetime ago, but how they actually came to fruition over the course of this incredible, weird, strange season. So first and foremost, what were your expectations of the team? Because I don't recall exactly where you were. I thought that they could be a top four seed in the Eastern Conference, which they likely were. They kind of took their foot off the gas during the last seeding games of the bubble, but at the same time, they were a top four team. And I think they were poised for a deeper playoff run if some things broke right, and they absolutely did. Where did you see this team back a year ago?
Yeah, I think they were a playoff lock, and I was like you. I thought they were good enough to be a top four team in the East, along with Philadelphia, Boston, and Milwaukee, right? And when a lot of people, you know, at least nationally, were talking about the Eastern Conference, the conversation was really about it's going to come down to matchups, right, between Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Boston, right? Like Boston was always, you know, the good matchup against Philadelphia, but Philadelphia was the good matchup against Milwaukee, and et cetera, and you kind of go around. And you really, and a lot of people said, you know, kind of it's going to be determined by how the regular season plays out and where the seeds end up falling. I always like to include Miami in that because you and I have talked about this a lot, where Miami was a great matchup against Milwaukee. Like they had Milwaukee's number, so to speak. And I thought that they were versatile enough to play Boston and Philadelphia strongly, even though I think I picked Philly coming out of the East. Yeah, and so, and I was really high on Boston as well, but I thought Miami was realistically a top four seed with the potential, depending on how the matchups played out, to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. But that said, that doesn't sound far off from where they ended up, and I think it was very far off from where they ended up because I never expected them to be a realistic title contender, and they certainly were this year. And we saw things from, you know, Bam Adebayo, and even Jimmy Butler and these other guys that I never imagined seeing, at least in this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. I keep bringing it up, and apologies to people who've heard this a million times, but one of the things that really stood out to me was right after the season ended and getting a chance to talk to Myers Leonard and him pointing out how strong the belief was that this team was a title contender. And if anything, you can look to the acquisitions of Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala as signs from the front office that they did believe that there was the ability to move forward.
It wasn't just talk. They walked the walk. They absolutely, that acquisition showed that they believed that they could do this thing.
Yeah. And you know, to throw another body at Giannis, to compete with the wing depth on Boston, et cetera. Sure. Whatever it was, as far as the rationale makes sense, but they were actually able to go on a much deeper run than a lot of people had anticipated at the beginning of the season. They saw the potential. So credit to Pat Riley and the Heat front office, as always, for having the vision to put something together that worked out as a true title contender. But I think another question I had moving forward, as far as the start of the season, was Jimmy's fit there. And I think, you know, you and I had talked about Jimmy coming to this team for what seems like for years. I remember even talking to you after I interviewed Jimmy when he was in Minnesota, prior to any talk about him coming to Miami and things of this sort, knowing that trade with, the Timberwolves had fallen apart a couple months later. But, you know, his work ethic, his dedication, but there was still the narrative about the combustible nature of his personality, what an asshole he was, and that how everybody expected him to just retire in South Beach and maybe even set this locker room ablaze on his way out. And maybe he would force his way to another team yet again. But at least from my perspective, he has been an incredible fit here, not just in terms of his playing style, but his personality, getting the most out of these players. The camaraderie that I saw in that locker room was better than any I've ever seen throughout my career. And it's just been amazing to see him in that kind of situation and thriving and talking about guys like Goran as friends, as close, you know, better than friends, you know, developing real strong relationships. What were your expectations for Jimmy's fit prior to the season?
I remember talking to you about Jimmy fitting next to Justice Winslow and if Justice would be the starting point guard.
Yep.
Which, you know, turned out to be a moot point, but you know, I think everybody knew that culturally it was an obvious fit, right? And he sort of takes the baton from Dwayne Wade. He becomes the standard bearer for Heat culture. And I think it's pretty remarkable. And, you know, people talk about it all the time during the bubble, at least on the broadcast, about how much he came to represent Heat culture in year one. But for somebody to become that comfortable.
Did you have a problem with the broadcast as much as Heat fans did? Because I know you and I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but seeing I muted the last four games of the finals. So I don't know if you had the same issue with Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy as a lot of Heat fans did.
I've been muting Mark Jackson broadcasts for 2 years. I actually, unless it's Doris Burke in the NBA, I actually didn't mind Stan Van Gundy in the earlier
rounds. Oh, no, he was phenomenal.
But unless it's Doris Burke, yeah, I don't like the TNT broadcast at all. I can't listen to Reggie Miller or Chris Webber.
No.
I mute it as long as it's not Doris Burke. Even when it's Doris Burke, sometimes I mute it because I kind of like watching sports with the sound off.
Yeah.
I know it's weird, but like the same goes for the NFL. Like Monday Night Football, first of all, is unlistenable right now. Not to go off on too much of a tangent, but like I'll watch Monday Night Football without the sound on now. I'm kind of starting to really love just listening to this. I'll put on like a podcast too or something from like previewing the actual game I'm watching or something sometimes. But I'm very much in favor of just not listening to broadcasts anymore. So to answer your question, I don't know. Maybe I hated it so much that I just wouldn't listen to it anymore. But I really didn't even give it much of a chance in the finals, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine what it was like. That said, I think it's remarkable that Jimmy Butler was able to become this sort of standard bearer of such a strong culture within such a strong organization so quickly. And it's not by the finals. It was day one, right? We've read 100 stories about how he shows up at 4 a.m. for workouts and stuff, and guys are following him. But it's, I don't know that I've ever seen that outside of like LeBron James, who is like, he is the culture wherever he goes, right? He, like, ever since he left Miami, he goes back to Cleveland and it's LeBron's team. He goes to the Lakers, it's LeBron's team. But outside of that sort of just dominating, you know, powerful all-time force, for a guy like Jimmy Butler, who a lot of people were like, who's better, Paul George or Jimmy Butler going into this season? Like, could you ever imagine Paul George walking into, and not to keep crapping on Paul George for an entire podcast, but could you imagine Paul George walking into an organization and establishing himself as the standard bearer of the team's, you know, culture and ethos? No way. Like he had that opportunity in LA right now, despite Kawhi being there. He
had it with Indiana before that. He didn't want
it. Absolutely.
Always shirked the responsibility of being the team leader. And I think he's talked about that. I mean, look,
right.
Being the best player on the team doesn't make you a leader of that team. And I think we saw that with the Clippers this year, that you have two very good players potentially in Kawhi and Paul George, but neither of them are true leaders. Jimmy is different than that. And I know it works because you've got Eric Spoelstra, you've got the full buy-in of that front office, and you've got UD there, who is of course the measuring stick for that culture as much as anybody else has ever been. But at the same time, he again, to use your phrase, he walks the walk and he talks the talk. You don't have that with the Clippers. You don't have that with a lot of other teams where you have the best player.
Didn't Kawhi text Jimmy Butler before he tried to get Paul George?
How would that fit have been? Yeah.
Like Jimmy Butler, like I think that would have been perfect, right? Like Jimmy Butler playing next to Patrick Beverley and all, not as perfect as the Miami Heat were, obviously, but like, I think the Clippers would have liked the Clippers much more if they had somebody like Jimmy Butler, who is very much in that kind of, he's like Kyle Lowry on steroids as far as attitude is concerned. And that's the sort of guy that Kawhi needs to play with. But, you know, I think that's the difference. I think we tend to get so much in the analytics and the X's and O's, and oh, Jimmy Butler doesn't shoot enough threes or blah, blah, blah. The dude is a winner. The dude is a leader, and you just need guys like that. Like there's so much talent in the NBA that when we're really talking about this top group of guys, when we, to go back to an earlier point I made, can he be the best player on a title contender type guys? It's guys who tend to have those leadership abilities that take very different forms. It could be anybody like Tim Duncan to LeBron James to Jimmy Butler, right? And I think Jimmy at least has that quality about him.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. I'm glad you brought up Duncan, because I don't think he was viewed as the same kind of leader as Kawhi is or as Jimmy is. But I mean, it worked, and I think a big part of that is having just a different culture. Like, Tim Duncan in Miami maybe doesn't fit as well. I mean, you kind of have to change or evolve. But alongside Popovich, alongside European players like Ginobili and Tony Parker, and maybe it starts to work a little bit more effectively. And I know
I think with Tim Duncan, he was always he was compared to Kobe Bryant for so much, who was, you know, the next Michael Jordan, and had that style of win at all costs type of, you know, quote unquote leadership, right? But Tim Duncan was very much lead by example, and I'm seeing it up close with Steph Curry, who I think is the standard bearer, kind of taking the torch away from Tim Duncan as far as leading in that way. Mm-hmm. And you just hear guys talk like Steph is not, you know, outspoken the way that Jimmy is. Right. But he is first one in, last one out. And that's not just cliche. That's real. And you see the guy, you see the way he works, and you see the way that, you know, it's sort of like less is more with him. Like if he does talk to you, like if you're a 21-year-old rookie on that team or whatever, and Steph is talking to you, you're just, first of all, awe-inspired, and you're going to listen to everything he says. And what he says is going to be very purposeful and succinct, but helpful. And I think he gets that from Steph, or I'm sorry, he gets that sort of from Tim Duncan. Not to say he learned it from Tim Duncan, but he's sort of the next guy of that ilk. But it works, right? Like it is leadership that works. Not to say that you know, Steph doesn't need Draymond Green on that team either to sort of to be the guy who's just going to get in your face and yell in the middle of, you know, a fourth quarter. But that was sort of Greg Popovich's role in San Antonio. And I think you need kind of those guys. Like Jimmy Butler's not going to be able to go out and win it all by himself. Kobe won't be able to go out and win it all by himself. With Kobe, you know, you had a guy like Shaq who was sort of a leader for half that locker room, right? Like they would rather follow Shaq than Kobe because Shaq was a little bit more lighthearted and can provide some comedic relief. Some guys follow Draymond instead of Steph. Some guys probably follow Spo instead of Jimmy. I don't know. I think you need like people who can provide like different doses of that. But you need one guy ultimately to follow, and I think Jimmy Butler has that quality.
All right, we'll continue talking a little bit more about the future of the Miami Heat and how they were able to develop some of the young players. I'm here with Wes Goldberg, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually men will just brush it off or blame themselves or avoid talking about it altogether. But Roman makes it easy and comfortable to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is so easy and discreet, you'll wish you had done it sooner. You can stop feeling uncomfortable and get started by completing an online visit. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. Reminder, they can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I'm here with Wes Goldberg. We're talking a little bit about Miami's future now because one of the questions that I had going into the season was how they would continue to develop some of their young players. Obviously, trading Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler, you changed the calculus a little bit as far as what the window is for developing young players, but you still had Justice Winslow. You didn't know what you were getting out of Bam Adebayo. And I think we certainly did not see Duncan Robinson emerging as a player that he did. I don't even think Kendrick Nunn was on anybody's radar whatsoever. And I know that you and I have both gotten a lot of crap for it earlier in the season prior to the hiatus when Kendrick was at his very best and competing to be one of the best rookies in this class. But it's just been so remarkable to see these players take a leap, which is, I think, what really pushed Miami beyond their early season expectations was the fact that they were able to get so much out of so many players that nobody anticipated being nearly as productive. Like, let's start with Bam. I mean, Bam, we saw flashes from him. We saw that he was going to be a hell of a great player. We didn't, you know, we were so used, I think, even you and I, even covering this team for as long as we did, knowing that Hassan Whiteside was on the roster, the expectations were different because we thought we would have this guy, not necessarily a center that you can throw the ball into and create from the low post or anything like that, but you had a big man who was going to be the focal point of the offense to some degree. And then Bam, I will never forget that stretch when he was starting when Hassan was hurt last season. And he was playing, and there was that game against the Clippers where he was bringing the ball up court, where he was initiating offense, where the passes were just moving quickly, and everything looked so much more fluid. And we kind of started to think, man, is this guy this kind of a player where he's that just so much more versatile version of what a center can be? But I don't know that you and I had those expectations that he would reach all-star status in one season.
No, nobody did. If anybody did, they're lying to you. I don't think even the Heat internally did.
Aside from Bam, right?
Yeah. But even the Heat, I think internally didn't expect this sort of leap. I mean, when I say Bam Adebayo is a top 15 player in the NBA, that's not hyperbole. Like name 15 players you would rather have. This is a guy who is an all NBA level defender, the second best passing center in the league, is starting to develop the 17 footer, and we can only imagine he's going to expand his range to 3-point range at some point. He's super young. What is he, 23, right? Like, yeah. How many centers would you pick right now over Bam? Like, you know, forget that. How many players, if you were drafting your team, would you pick over Bam for the long haul? There's not many, right?
Not many,
and no. As far as centers are concerned, the only guys who I rank clearly above Bam right now, not even thinking like long-term potential, but just right now is Anthony Davis, who's a center.
Yeah.
He started center in the final game of the finals. He's a center now. And Nikola Jokic. And yeah, that's it. Joel Embiid at the peak of his powers is probably better, but he's not available the way that Bam is. And isn't as versatile the way that Bam is, honestly.
Oh, without a doubt.
And I think Embiid's a pretty versatile player, but not nearly what Bam is. So with him being there at the middle of, in the middle of the floor, being able to pass that way at that height and be able to relieve the offensive duties from guys like Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero and Goran Dragic, it allows Dragic to be more of a scorer than he ever has been, which is why he was able to score so consistently. It allows Jimmy Butler to sometimes play point guard, sometimes play off the ball. Tyler Hero, same thing. It just unlocks so much. And Spoelstra used to say, we'll say this all the time, what Bam does doesn't show up in the box score. Jimmy Butler calls Bam the Miami Heat's best player. I'm not sure that that's far off. I would still take Jimmy Butler in a head-to-head, but, you know, Bam's really close.
I mean, he's been the focal point of both their offense and defense. He is the key to what makes this team so successful because he can initiate their offense from the high post where he's moving the ball, where he can work that dribble handoff combo with Duncan Robinson. I mean, so much of it works because of Bam. And we saw that in games 2 and 3 without him on the lineup, where it was just, you kind of had to redefine who you are as a team. And it didn't really click until that second half of game 2 in the finals, where they had to say, you know what, we can't rely on Bam coming to our aid and making up for a lot of the ground that we lose in terms of size and things of that sort. And so they had to shift this type of defense where they were constantly rotating and moving and picking up guys and closing out with a kind of speed and intention that they did not show in earlier in the series. So I think that was a huge turning point, but Bam, he just changes everything. But, you know, to that point, then another guy who really adds a whole hell of a different dynamic to this team is Duncan Robinson. And I think a lot of people are waffling a little bit, kind of forgetting the impact he had during the course of the regular season. I think it's somewhat unfair because he did struggle in the finals. And so there is always going to be some recency bias, but what's your view on Duncan and his fit moving forward? If you want to continue hearing our conversation about Duncan Robinson, as well as Wes's thoughts on the future of Miami and what they should do as far as rebuilding this offseason, make sure to check that out as part 2 of an upcoming episode. I'll be talking about Bam Adebayo's extension, as well as some other State of the Heat affairs. And of course, wrapping up this conversation with Wes Goldberg. Special thanks to him, of course, for always making the time to come on the show. Make sure to subscribe to the show whenever possible, leave a review, and thank you as always for your support.